Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.ByteRadio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my special guest is Stephen Morris, and we'll be talking about the intersection of humanizing the business culture with the driving force behind human connectedness, as well as several other topics of which Stephen is an expert on. Over the past 25 years, Stephen Morris has been a leader and innovator in the brand strategy, marketing, and creative industries, including leading Mph Degree to be a purpose-driven brand strategy consultancy, and co-founding The Studio, Leadership Experiences Through Artistry. Stephen has been honored to work with more than 250 companies and 2,000 business leaders, ranging from brands in consumer products, consumer electronics, education, government, nonprofit, sports, and entertainment. For more information, you can visit his website, which is themthdegree.com, and that is themthdegree.com. And I do have a direct link to his website in the show page description. So with that, I'd like to welcome Steve to the show. Good day, Steve.
Good day, Robert. Thank you so much for hosting. I appreciate the platform here and the introduction.
I really want to thank you for your time. I love being able to share with our business listeners some insight and information, and in particular, you know, what it is that you're doing. So I have to start with the Mph Degree. I mean, the name of the company, it is very catchy. It's memorable, which I'm sure as a brand, you know, strategist, that's a good thing. But tell us a little bit about the idea behind it.
Sure, yeah. Well, most people know the mathematical term Nth Degree, NTH, which means without limits. And really what we did is when I evolved the organization many years ago, I took my name off the door and we were looking for a name to apply it to. And this was part of a nonprofit give back strategy program that we had developed, and we were using Mph Degree as the give back name. So really, from my perspective, Mph Degree means marketing without limits. And the thing that's important about that is that, people tend to think in the business world about marketing as not necessarily in the kindest manner. And because of the kind of work that I do and the organizations that I do it with, we definitely wanted to stand apart in the world of marketing.
Yeah, well, like I say, it's memorable. And you know, when I first saw it, I kind of gave a chuckle because I thought, boy, he certainly captured that one. I mean, because it's, you know, the idea is you want people to remember you, you know, remember who you
Absolutely.
Are.
Absolutely.
And that does work. So, you know, before we get into talking about the humanizing aspect of business culture and that kind of thing, I'd like to spend just a few minutes, you know, talking about branding and brand strategy. You've written books on the topic, and I think sometimes business owners, and maybe even leaders, sometimes don't recognize, you know, even what their brand is and the importance of it. So would you mind explaining a little bit, how would you describe someone's brand and its importance?
Great. Thank you, Robert. And I really, really appreciate that question, because a lot of people, even in the business world, they think about a brand and they think about it typically from the perspective of a, you know, what the logo identity is for an organization. So when we think about Nike and the Nike swoosh or something like that, a lot of people think that is the brand. The way I think about it, and most people who are serious about brand strategy, they think about it, they think a brand is ultimately how any one person experiences an organization. And that could be the way they experience the organization either on the inside, such as the folks that work for the organization, but most potently from the outside of the organization. So the customers or the world that is interfacing or interacting with that particular organization. And the reason it's the culmination of how any one person experiences that is that there are many different what I call touch points to a brand. And so a brand touch point might include anything from, like I mentioned, the logo to the organization, but it also might include some of the language or the belief systems or even the way that if you think about a consumer products company, the way that they would package their products and how they communicate their messages out there through advertising, and even the way that they would create even thought leadership or how they manage their own reputation in the media. So any organization might have, even small organizations could have up to, you know, 200 different touch points. And they all culminate into how the outside world experiences them. And then to the second part of your question, the reason that that is important is that people want to trust the relationships that they have. And this is true for the way that we interact with individuals. So you and I are having an interaction here and we're building a trusted relationship and your listeners are also interacting with us and we're building trust with them. And we have, you know, a trusted relationship with our family and friends and things like that. But it's also true that businesses also want to have trusted relationships, and we that purchase from businesses, be that in a business-to-business exchange or business-to-consumer exchange, such as consumer products, we want to trust the organizations that we're interacting with. And a brand is one of those things that creates the trust, because the brand is what creates the experience. And so it's my belief that organizations need to be very thoughtful about how they communicate who they are, how they promise what they do to the outside world, and how they deliver on that promise to the customers that purchase products or services from them. So I believe it's very important, and we can see in this day and age that the most potent organizations out there spend a lot of time, money, energy, and effort, and even thoughtfulness, thinking about what their brand actually means, both to them internally through their culture, but as important is externally what it means to the outside world.
Yeah. excuse me. When, as you were going through and listing a lot of those touch points, you know, it just became clear to me that, you know, in your on your website with your business, you talk about brand strategy. And as you were going through those touch points, you know, it became clear to me that recognizing the diverse activities, you know, from logo, packaging, language, belief, all of that, that it really does seem to require a strategy, because you can, any one of those touch points can, if it's not in sync with the others, can certainly mess up the communication of a brand, or, you know, what you want to communicate as a brand.
Yeah, absolutely. And it would be, you know, I liken a brand to an individual. So if we think about the psychology of an individual, and so let's say we're taking me as an example of that. So Steve Morris, he walks around outside in the world and he wears his hair a particular way and he, you know, dresses in the clothes that he chooses in a particular way, and he lives in a particular neighborhood, and he also talks about particular things. All of those things are the makeup essentially of my character, and then they're also thoughtfully presented, because, you know, I'm the one that's buying my clothes and deciding whether or not to, you know, take a shower and shampoo my hair and get it cut at regular intervals and things of that nature. You know, we're all doing this on a regular basis as human beings anyhow. And because business is nothing more than a human invention or an invention of man, I also believe that business has its own sort of persona and character and personality. And those people who are running those businesses should be equally as thoughtful, if not more so, to how they present themselves to the outside world and how that's connected to the belief systems that exist within the business itself. And so the brand strategy is really the organization of the belief systems and how that connects with how that business operates or what business it's in and what products it, or services it might create, and then how it delivers those things to the outside world. And then the marketing really is, we overfold that, is really just the manner in which that we tell our story to the world.
Yeah. So if a business has not really put much attention to its brand or you know, the various touch points, you know, that you listed or whatever is unique to their particular business, it seems then the first step with regard to kind of getting a handle on what that brand is to kind of go through each of those touch points and get clarity and synchronicity between those in order to kind of firm up and actually maybe you know, kind of present themselves in a clear fashion?
Yeah, I would suggest that the business leaders need to even start further upstream than that. So one of my favorite questions to business leaders is, let's assume that your business is successful and that money is not an object, or money is going to happen within your business. So the question is, why does your business exist beyond making money? So what right does your business have to exist in the world? And if it's only about money, that's sort of one thing. But if it isn't just about money, if then it speaks to what value am I putting into the world and how am I making the lives of my customers in some way, shape, or form a better place, then we begin to answer this biggest question, which is our big why, or our brand purpose. And really the answer to that question, while seemingly easy, is quite complex to really distill it down into meaningful language. It's the difference that you're really trying to make in the world. So if you think about like your radio program, for instance, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show, you have a very clear purpose behind that. And I believe any business on this planet should have a very clear purpose for why it exists. The whole brand consideration begins with that purpose.
Okay. Now, you mentioned, you know, that kind of looking at, you know, if the purpose is making money, that's one thing, or more. Do you feel that maybe historically that businesses, there was like an emphasis on that, just that money-making aspect versus, you know, maybe even in today's environment, being more aware of a purpose, you know, beyond profit?
Yeah, we could get into a very, very fascinating and very historical consideration here and conversation, Robert. So let's go back to the times of early stage economics. And early stage economics would include something like the barter system. So let's say I was a leathersmith and you were a metalsmith. And we lived in the same village. And what I would do is I would create my products and I would put them out there for other people to exchange services with. And so if I was in the leather business and you were in the metal business, we would exchange products so that you would have the leather tools that you would need to, you know, work in your family and in your work environment and things like that. And then I would exchange those with you in order to have the metal that I needed to work in my business environment. So really what we're talking about is an exchange of value. So depending on how valuable my products were, how well made they were, how thoughtful they were made, and how beneficial they were to your world, the more I could get in return for those things. I would argue that really that hasn't changed. Any business on the planet today should be creating something of value. And really, that value statement is the bigger question of why we exist as a business. However, I will say that, and this goes to your point, in this day and age, I think we're living much more in a highly conscious business environment where businesses and business leaders are much clearer about the reason that they're doing business beyond making money. And they're also much more forthcoming in their willingness to put those reasons out into the world, because customers are sort of demanding it. There's so many choices out there when it comes to businesses that we can do business with. If you think about airlines, for instance, we could choose any number of airlines to fly from here to Boston, for instance. But it's those airlines that are providing greater value for the same amount of money, or value where you might get better service, or you might actually just feel better about purchasing from that particular airline. Those brands become much more valuable in that consideration because they're aligned with the purpose and the benefits of the people that want to fly with that airline. So part of this then gets into core values, or the value systems of individuals and organizations. So if you value great service, for instance, you might want to fly with Southwest Airlines because you know that they take care of their customers, where that might not be the case with another airline.
Yeah. Yeah. And that competitive nature and availability certainly does play into, companies needing to attract, a limited number of customers, that are around among, their competitors. So now with in the topic of today's show, we talked about the intersection of humanizing business culture with the driving force behind human connectedness. So I guess maybe let's start with the driving force behind human connectedness, because I guess that's what then drives the or leads to the need for humanizing business culture. So what do you feel, that driving force of connectedness, what do you think is, the basis of that, and where do you think that is leading us from a perspective of business?
Yeah, great question. So let's look at the human psyche, and so we humans are born some of the most vulnerable beings on the planet. So most animals, when they're born, they can walk or swim or fly within minutes or days of being born. Human beings, on the other hand, it takes an average about 10 to 12 months just to learn to walk. And then they need nurturing for, another, 10 years, 20 years until they're actually ready to go out into the wild, if you will, on their own.
Mm-hmm.
So we need caretakers and protectors just to survive. And there's a benefit to that, which is that we humans also come ready-made to connect. And we have this deep sense of connection. And Darwin talked about it very deeply in that, sort of in the long history of humankind, it's those animals that learn to both collaborate and improvise are the ones that have prevailed. And so when we learn to connect with other people and work in collaboration with other human beings, we both amplify our connection with those other human beings, but we also amplify our effectiveness. And so we human beings are also wired to belong in a sense of a value set. So if you think about the way that more or less any organization is both founded and any organization is essentially run, it's based upon a belief system or a value mm-hmm. set. So if you think about a country, a university, a neighborhood, or any business organization, or even like a club that you might belong to, we raise our hands and we say, I want to belong to this club because what they value is something that I value. And it might be even like something as simple as like a chess club or something like that. But there's not just a behavior connection within it, but there's a value connection within it. And I think because we humans are so wired to belong in this deep connection to the things that we have aligned value systems with, it inherently takes root when it comes to the business organization. And so the clearer a business is about what it stands for, the more clearly it can attract other individuals, those people that would work for that organization, that would also mm-hmm. align with the belief systems and contribute to it in a much more powerful way. And if you just fast forward through that, then if that organization does a really good job of saying, here's what we believe, here's how we work, and we want people to come on board and be aligned with that, you can just then see how quickly the belief systems and the amplified effect of that team of people then goes out into the world and does, you know, really effective work.
Yeah. Okay. And you know, I mean, that makes perfect sense. Now, when it comes time to establishing or communicating, I guess, you know, what those core values are, and you know, in today's environment, we can be very tribal in our beliefs, when it comes to you know, communicating that core value system, is it important to communicate it in a way that you can be, you know, more inclusive? You know, the idea is that, you know, I mean, obviously you can't be everything to everyone, you know, and so, but when it comes to, you know, crafting, you know, and implementing those core values, is it, how do you kind of navigate, you know, that tribalism that exists?
Yeah, thank you, Robert. So I hear a couple of different questions in that.
Okay.
So first and foremost is the question of exclusion or inclusion. And, you know, you know, we could have a very fascinating conversation around just tribalism and the good parts to that and the perhaps not so good parts to that. So when we think about the scenario I just unfolded. So you take an organization, and let's just take Southwest Airlines, for instance, and they have
okay.
they deeply believe in this idea of love, and they really are talking about not eros but agape, the Greek definition of agape, which is the form of sort of community connectedness and.
Mm-hmm.
It's really at the heart of it is a sense of belonging and also serving mankind. So love is like their stock ticker symbol, LUV, and you see a little heart on most of their airplanes and things like that. So one of the things that they firmly believe is that, you know, they really have a deep love for their customers. And they also believe that if they care for those customers and they care for their employees, that they will attract like-minded individuals, people that want to work in the airline industry, but also want to serve customers in a particular way on a particular level, that they'll attract the kinds of employees that want to actually serve their own purpose and then the core values. So then the second part of your question is how does an organization go about formulating or defining what their core values are? And because it might change. So let's take the difference between, let's say, Southwest Airlines and the core values that might exist there, and maybe even another really great airline, which is like JetBlue. Now, their core value set might be completely different, but they're both in the airline industry. And so what I like to do when working with an organization and helping them define their core values, and this tends to happen after the brand purpose or the organizational purpose, which is their why, is already defined, is I love for them to go through an exercise of looking at some of their shining examples of their best employees. And so let's say we're in a room, we're thinking about the great employees at our organization, and we identify that Sally has attributes that we can look at and say, wow, she really takes care of people and she's a great listener. She's perpetually curious and always asking great questions. She's thoughtful in her responses and doesn't just wait for her time to respond in a conversation, but she really echoes back what somebody else has said to make sure that there's deep understanding that takes place in a conversational nature. So we could look at Sally's behavior and we could say, wow, there's some really great attributes that Sally shows up with every day. And we can capture those things because we want to see more Sally-like individuals throughout our organizations. And almost all organizations have those individuals that are sort of star employees. And they're not star employees necessarily because they're outperforming other people, but more so because they're exemplifying a particular behavior set that they would love to see other people either emulate or hire new people that already have the same sort of personality attributes and value system that can live their brand and move it forward. And so I like to work with organizations in identifying not just the individuals, but the behavior sets around those things. And almost as important is the stories that brings those core values to life. So for instance, if we take Sally again, we could identify the key attributes of the core behaviors of Sally. So the couple things that I just identified is she's a great listener. She's very curious. She believes in service. She wants to work for mutual understanding. You know, those might be already four core values of the organization. But we can also identify real stories that Sally lived or experiences that Sally had that we can say, this is where these attributes of core values came to life. And if we think about, again, human nature, how tethered we are into the storytelling attributes, you think about how powerful an organization like Pixar is and their storytelling and even the work of Joseph Campbell and his hero's journey and things like that. Stories are the things that make our life very believable. And stories are also the things that we very, very quickly remember. And so if we were to begin to tell stories about here's what Sally did in this situation or here's what Sally did in that situation, those are the stories that not just reinforce the core values, but could also be amplified and emulated throughout the organization and then shared and evangelized within the organization. And it ends up being like a teaching tool. So Sally did this in this situation. Wow, there's a lot we can learn from that.
Wow. You know, I'm so happy to hear that, you know, the ideas, you know, the storytelling. I am right in the middle of publishing a book, and it's called The Heart and Soul of Caring, and it's a collection of stories from people that I know who are caregivers and what they learned and, you know, what they experienced and highlighting the essence of the person for whom they give and care. And you know, at the end of each one was, you know, the things that they learned and all that kind of thing. And just reinforces for me, you know, the importance of storytelling and connecting, you know. And as a matter of fact, I had one of the caregivers, I just have a proof copy now, and I got them out to the caregivers, and one of them called me up this morning and said, you know, listen, I'd like to change a few things here and there, you know, about it, which is great because that's the whole idea behind the proof. But then she got to one part where it was that, you know, she did, you know, the makeup and even did taking care of her mother's toenail, a pedicure kind of thing. And she goes, I want to take that out. And I thought, no. I said, you know, I know someone who's, you know, 84, and her biggest treat is a pedicure. And so, I mean, to me, it was one of those details of the personal experience that I think people would be able to identify with. And she just kind of felt embarrassed about it. And I thought, no, you shouldn't be embarrassed about your story.
No, I completely agree with that. And I so love what you're talking about. And you noted early on in that what you were just sharing, and how stories are both stories that are important from a sharing standpoint, but there are also things that we connect. So, we all love stories, and we're even born from stories. You know, we could all tell stories about, what our family did, not just when we were kids, but in previous generations. And in a certain way, stories begin to affirm who we are, not just as individuals, but who we are as a community and as a culture. And we all want affirmations that our lives have meaning and a purpose. And we want to we want to all belong to something that's much larger than us. And nothing goes as great in affirming who we are, what we believe, and what we believe is important, and even connecting to other people as it does through story and storytelling and story sharing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Steve, we're about halfway through the show, so I want to take just a quick break, and I do want to invite listeners, if you would like to call in and ask any questions, you can call in at 619-789-4359, and for those of you listening live in the chat room, feel free to ask any questions. And then when we come back from break, Steve, I want, you mentioned, very effectively the aspect of human connectedness. So I want to now kind of look at that other part of that equation and the humanizing of business culture and exactly what that would look like. Okay.
Great. Beautiful. Thank you.
Okay, great. Okay, everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back after this very brief break.
Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link that will give you access to more than 1,200 shows we have had over the past 7 years. Also on the site are links to the products and services we provide, books, greeting cards, photography, and a wellness store. Our show is available as a free podcast on iTunes, and you can subscribe for free at the iTunes Store, or even quicker, there is a link on our website homepage. We are also on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, etc., and we also have buttons to those platforms on the top of our homepage. Our website, www.biteradio.me, has much for you to explore and enjoy. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. Again, today my very special guest is Stephen Morris, and we're talking about the intersection of humanizing the business culture with the driving force behind human connectedness, as well as branding strategy, marketing, all kinds of things in which Stephen is a leader in. Again, you can find out more by visiting his website, which is themthdegree.com. That's themthdegree.com. And again, I do have a direct link to his website in the show page description. And also, Stephen is available on social media platforms, and you can, from his website, you can connect to him and on those platforms. And Stephen and I are connected on Facebook, and I'm looking forward to following him there. So with that, we're back, Steve.
Great. Thank you, Robert.
Okay. So now we talked about the human connectedness aspect. So what does humanizing aspect to the business culture. How can business culture humanize?
Yeah, so, you know, it's interesting, part building on some of the things that we've already talked about, you know, including core values and stories and how core values come to life through stories, and the belief systems and how individuals, you know, who raise their hand and determine and define and step into their own level of belongingness with the work that they do, you know, humanizing the business culture. Like, so for instance, one of the terms that I really dislike is the term human resources. And I find it to be an incredibly dehumanizing or unhumanizing way to talk about people's contributions to an organization. And so when we think about people's individuals' contributions to organizations, we think about, you know, really regardless of the role or the function or even the organizational level, from the highest level to the entry level positions that makes up the work that that the people do. Everybody within the organization makes a difference. And I think a humanized culture really takes the humanized aspects of those contributions and folds that into more of a level system of the way that treat human beings or treat one another within a business culture. And so the way that we work together, the way that we communicate with one another, and then ultimately even the way that we would kind of communicate to the outside world, even through, let's say, an organization, go back to the airlines, for instance, the way that the flight attendants treat the other human beings that come on their airline and are on their flight, that's also a very humanized manner, or not, depending on what the belief systems of the organization is. So it's my belief system that I think we should strike the word human resources or human capital, if you will, and really think about it much more so as individual contributions to a collective whole, and really work within organizational systems that really count very heavily the contributions of individuals.
Yeah, you know, I had a background in the corporate world in both banking and the restaurant industry. And, you know, when it came to, you know, corporate culture and, you know, how not only how each treated their customers, but also how employees treated each other, and then how line management treated, you know, upper man. I mean, the way that the businesses that I worked, worked with, and this is probably in, I'm talking about the, you know, the 90s and the early 2000s. It was very, there was a hierarchy that you basically followed, you know, without question. And there was a, in one particular company, I was a trainer, a corporate trainer. So I was the voice between line management and upper management. And I mean, it was just amazing how each one seemed to demonize, in a way, the other. You know, the line was like, hey, we're the ones doing the work, we're the ones bringing in the money, and the other upper were like, you know, well, we're the ones calling the shots, you know. And it was just odd for me. It was, I always had to seem to straddle both worlds and try and communicate to each other the other's value, you know. I'm not sure if it was just this particular organization being dysfunctional, but I recognize that in a lot of organizations, and it seems that the core values weren't evenly applied.
Yeah. You're also talking about what I would consider the evolution that's taking place away from the the business operation that would be considered command and control. In other words, mm-hmm. the leadership team commands, and they can then control the individuals within the organization or the teams. And that's the way that most, especially large businesses, used to operate. And I can even say that up until, you know, relatively recent times. And I think there's a new type of leader that is emerging that is much more heart-centric, and they really understand and they are very committed to this working with the soul of an organization. And so those particular leaders, they think about not just the heart of the organization, but how do I connect on a much more level playing field, a flat level organization where it can be much more complex, but more courage and curiosity can take place within the conversations and the explorations that happen within the business. And so those leaders, I think, are the new form of leaders that are taking larger strides into making organizations much more effective and much more communicative, and I think even much more valuable to the outside world. So again, if we go back to Southwest Airlines and the, you know, historically the way that that organization was founded, the leaders of that organization and even the individuals that are leading it today, they think a lot about the word heart. And I'm a big fan of the French word cœur, meaning heart. And its cœur actually comes from, it shares its root with the word courage. And really, courage is all about, you know, facing those things that are perhaps challenging, complex, and maybe even slightly or drastically scary, and moving through them regardless of the fear that we're facing, and really putting aside the fear. And I think curiosity is the door in which we walk through into the presence of the highest part of ourselves. And I believe it takes curiosity takes courage, and courage takes curiosity, and these two ideas sort of play off of one another, especially in the leadership function. And they also can play off of one another in the way that we can communicate throughout the organization.
Yeah, you know, that was one of the word curiosity, you know, has come up not only in today's discussion, but also on your website and in the work you do, and I found it curious, you know, that was, you know, a particular focus of yours. Because, but, you know, I mean, in, you know, in many businesses, curiosity is, you know, kind of reserved for research and development, you know, kind of areas mm-hmm. of a business, you know. And, you know, those who are, you know, in other aspects of the organization, you know, curiosity is sometimes viewed as a distraction, or maybe even slight, you know, resistance or rebellion in a way. But yeah. It seems that, well, you know, I mean, this, again, this, I'm coming from personal experience here. Yeah, I was sure. One of those that was curious, and then I was banished to a restaurant to learn how to. From corporate to learn how to run a restaurant, you know, this is your punishment for being curious. but I loved it.
I'm sorry to hear that, Robert.
Manager.
I'm sorry.
Well, yep. I mean, I could run a full shift of Denny's, you know, even though it was
great.
A graveyard
yeah.
and not real busy, but as long as I wasn't in the kitchen, we were, and food costs were okay. But it was one of those cases where, you know, curiosity was not of value. But it seems mm-hmm. that, you know, in today's world, you know, curiosity leads to innovation, which is really critical in trying to not only keep up with, but also surpass the competition.
Oh, it's non-negotiable. Peter Drucker, the famous management guru from especially in the 1960s, said there's really only two functions of any organization, one of which is innovation, the other of which is marketing. And so if we break those two things down, marketing, we've already talked about that a little bit, at least from a brand perspective, and that's, you know, telling what you do to the outside world and telling that in a manner that is compelling. And then the other part of it is, and this goes back to your point, Robert, which is really all about innovation. And so if you think about any organization, regardless of industry, they're going to have some competition. And so in the world of marketing, we think of a market position or a brand position as the intersection between relevance and differentiation. So relevance is what's in it for the customer, or what value am I offering the customer? And differentiation is how are we different from other organizations that we might compete against? And it's really through the lens of innovation, how an organization not just innovates its products or services, but even how it might even approach the way it communicates what it does, or how innovative they might be in their cultural systems, or even in their cultural approach. Those things can be very powerful mechanisms to outpace and outmaneuver the competition. And so when we think about curiosity, curiosity is the operating system to anything creative or innovative. And so when we suspend what we already know and we ask ourselves the what if questions that exist out into the world, and then begin to create new ways of doing things, or new ways of producing things, or new ways of manufacturing things, or even new products, then we lean into the world of curiosity, and we understand the value of that. And I will say, and this goes back to your earlier point, that, you know, maybe curiosity doesn't belong in at every point in every portion of the organization. So you might begin to scratch your head a little bit if the CFO is a very curious CFO, like he's creating new systems or functions in the way that they track money. But even in that particular environment, you know, curiosity is really important, because if the manner in which that organization is spending money or investing money or even managing their money, you know, they can certainly ask questions. Is this the best way for us to be doing those things? So even in a seemingly far off function or far off discipline, such as accounting or money management within the business structure, curiosity can still play a role there.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, in particular, again, in the accounting aspect, the rules and regulations and government and work, you know, kinds of requirements are dynamic. I mean, and they're changing. So, you know, it would be prudent to be able to have a curious aspect in the way that things have been done, and how they would fit into maybe a new government regulation or deregulation, you know, and how to shift it appropriately. So I would think that, you know, I mean, organizations and the people that make it up, as well as the customers, I mean, it's a dynamic world. I mean, it's constantly changing. And you know, I would think that the way things have, quote, always been done, you know, may not be the most efficient in whatever today's environment is.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, because of the, you know, computer age that we live in, we see things accelerating drastically, you know, the way that business is run today, for the most part, and this is true in many different segments of our society, versus say 10 or 15 years ago, the business landscape is completely different. And so even the structures for accounting, or the way that organizations manage their leadership, or the way that they go about innovating, and certainly the way they go about marketing themselves and putting themselves out into the world, that's drastically changing. And so our organizations need to be agile in their thinking. And because what happens is we see organizations that are unfortunately left in the dust. You know, an unfortunate yet good example of that might be a company like Kodak, who really for decades had a corner on the photography industry and had every right to be the main player in photography for future times. But they got lost in their centralized thinking and the way that they were actually producing products and what products they're producing, how they were selling them. And, you know, we can see where Kodak is today. And this might be true for other organizations or industries in the future.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Well, we have a little bit of time left, but I really kind of want to shift and talk a little bit that I noticed that you have, that you're a co-founder of The Studio, Leadership Experiences Through Artistry. And I thought, artistry, And then I went and looked at your bio, and I noticed your Bachelor of Arts in Fine Art, and also your MFA from Temple University in Tyler School of Art. So tell us a little bit about the studio, and I'm just curious, you know, I love the idea of artistry, you know, and its influences. So tell us a little bit about what that's all about.
Yes, thank you, and thanks for opening the door there. So the studio is an organization that I co-founded with two other artists. So I myself am as you noted, a painter. I show in galleries across the country. My two partners, one is a poet out of Seattle. Her name is Libby Wagner. And she's also she also does a ton of work in sort of organizational development, and she's been doing that for 10 or 12 years. And then our third partner is a musician and performer, and he is an Irish musician and comes from just a long heritage of Irish performers and musicians, but he's currently living in New York. And what we do is we work primarily with leaders of organizations, and we help them with the tools of artistry and in this process that we call the circle of artistry. And I can get into that in any level of detail that you want, but we may not have time for that here today. And we work to help these leaders work with essentially wholeheartedness, because if the leader has a deeper knowing of who they are and knowing of what drives them and their own individual artistry, how they show up as a leader, how they communicate as a leader, and their unique manners of leading. If they have a greater awareness of those things, they'll also have a deeper sense of wholeheartedness and a connection to our human wholeness, which is essentially what we consider the medicine or the antidote for disengaged workforces.
Wow. That's a wonderful approach, and it really even emphasizes the human nature, you know, of leaders and leadership, and the leaders in the leadership they provide. And I would think that would open up the whole organization to that kind of expression as well.
Yeah, it's, you know, we think about, you know, that there's the global numbers that Gallup puts out every year that really talks about, you know, what the workforce engagement numbers look like. And so for the last 10 years, the workforce engagement percentage is about 30%. So just translating that very quickly, wow, that means that roughly 30% of global workforces are engaged in the business that they're doing. So if we think about that from an oven standpoint, and if we and this goes back into your running a Denny's, and if you're trying to, you know, bake a loaf of bread, and you're only using 30% of the heat of that oven, then it's going to be very difficult to achieve what you want to achieve in the bread baking. So if an organization, which is true, is working with essentially a team that's 70% disengaged, we're losing all kinds of connection and productivity and things of that nature. So we believe that the antidote to that is this wholeheartedness and a reconnection with the individual. And even in our purpose-driven society, we believe that, and this dovetails into the work that I do in Brand Evolutions, is that when people double down in their belief systems, they become much more engaged in what they're doing.
Yeah. Wow. That I really like that approach, that wholeheartedness approach, and in the artistry aspect. I mean, it's, you know, there's, you know, if you want to get to the heart of the matter of people's experiences through art, music, you know, painting, whatever, you know, is a surefire way to do that, you know, with little resistance, you know, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, you know, we want as humans to be in a state of awe and we want to be moved. And, you know, the role of the artist is to move people. And I believe that that's true also as the leader, as artist. because if you think about, again, about the purpose of business is to create value. In order to move people, you have to create value. And so if we think about it from that perspective, then the business leader is an artist, and an artist is a business leader.
Absolutely. Well, Steve, this has really been a wonderful I've really enjoyed speaking with you, and just I've learned a lot, and really you've kind of piqued my awareness in many different areas. So I really want to thank you for your time.
Well, thank you so much, Robert. This has been an enlightening and fascinating conversation. I can't wait to see your book come out. And I have absolutely loved talking with you today.
Thank you. And I look forward to following you on Facebook and seeing, you know, what your journey holds ahead of you. So thank you again for your time. And I look forward to keeping in touch.
Great. Thank you, Robert. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Stephen Morris, and we've been talking about the intersection of humanizing the business culture with the driving force behind human connectedness, as well as talking about branding, marketing, and you can find out more about Steve by visiting his website, which is themthdegree.com, and that's themthdegree.com, and do go on his website, explore the blog, which is the Emph Degree Insights, and he's got some really good blog posts there. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show, and until we meet again.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me, that's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.